Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute in the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back talking about minute 83 through 84 of Dune Part 2. Yesterday we left off halfway through a sentence. So I'm going to go back and, you know, pick up where we left off with Margot's weird voice in Fade's head kind of stuff. Fade, you know, after initially getting hit with the first questions with her usage of the voice, says, "You're Bene Gesserit." And she says, "And what makes you say that?"
That.
And that is where we start with that.
Mm-hmm. We get some background rumblings that are going on. The tension's building.
There's a lot of background rumblings. The lights are still, you know, going off and going crazy with the fireworks and everything. And Fade says, "I remember now. I dreamed about you last night." And Margot's response, "A pleasant dream, I hope." "Don't mock me, woman. I wouldn't dare. I know your Bene Gesserit tricks." "And what do you know about the Bene Gesserit?" And all of Margot's responses are like in his head, still utilizing the voice, still like really fucking with him. And during all of this, she is turned away from him and walking, and we're not even looking at her mouth moving at this point.
Right.
So this is like truly in, she's fucking in his head. And this is why I feel like what we talked about it yesterday, like her usage of the voice and, you know, manipulation of psychology is probably the best in the Bene Gesserit, or one of the best in the Bene Gesserit, because of this.
Yeah.
We see, you know, near the end of the movie, you know, spoilers, there's a little bit of psychic, you know, back and forth between Gaius Helen Moheim and Jessica, but that would make sense for two sisters of the Bene Gesserit to be able to communicate telepathically. Yeah. But for her to just go super hard into, you know, Fade's, you know, brain like that, where he has to, you know, like verbally, you know, give all of his responses, but she's just like still living in his head.
And that's a thick old head to get through.
The bone shield of his forehead is very, very dense.
She is walking away from him. And I thought it was really funny that he continues his Dennis Reynolds impersonation, where he goes, "Look at me when you're talking to me."
And she does look at him. Because as soon as she asks, "And what do you know about the Bene Gesserit?" using the voice, we see her speak for the first time again.
Yeah.
Where she turns and says, "Tell me, something wrong?" And they're in a brand new room.
Yeah.
So now, real quick, one thing I want to talk about before we talk about this new room that they're in.
Okay.
I wanted to save these notes from Art and Soul until we were talking about all of the voice moments, because Art and Soul goes to talk very in depth about the design and construction of this long bridge. And the bridge is deliberately built to look like the rib cage of a whale.
Makes sense.
Which kind of makes me think that they're, you know, because like it or not, Brian Herbert is, you know, a producer on the movie. There's a lot of, you know, things that are being influenced by some of his writings as well, with, you know, all of the history of the Harkonnen and everything. So it would stand to reason that it is a tie-in and a callback to, you know, what's going on there.
I guess this would technically be a call forward, since this came out before Prophecy.
I mean,
it's a reference.
Yeah, sure. The lighting for this scene with all of the fireworks going off in this hallway is practical. The hallway itself is a practical set that was built.
Nice.
Not at the, you know, great length of scale.
Sure, sure.
But it was built, and, you know, it was like 30 meter tall, what they called the rib cage. 30 meter tall, like columns and everything. And then there were these lighting panels between all of the columns that would go off in a highly planned and highly timed, but seemingly sporadic, you know, sequence, because they had every movement and everything, you know, blocked in the scene to be in the right place at the exact right time with the amount of flashing and everything that was going on the characters' faces to like add to that weirdness in yeah. terms of like the horror movie-esque kind of appearance of the scene. So they talk about how like tight the timing on the blocking for where everyone needed to be at the exact moments during the scene and during the sequence was, that so much work went into these shots. And that's kind of in my head, probably why they don't have shots of the, at least of Margot speaking to help with the editing of the timing and everything.
Sure, sure. That would make sense.
So,
it paid off, right? Yeah. For sure.
I mean, the sections of Art and Soul that talk about it are very like in depth in terms sure. of like laying out and showing pictures of the sets that were built for this.
Yeah.
But then, we end up at the end of this voice conversation in a new room where
it's just the three of them.
I'm sorry?
It's just the three of them in this room.
Yep. It's Fade, Margot, and then the most important thing, mm-hmm. the glow globe.
Motherfucking glow globe's there. And Fade's looking a little confused. I mean, he's been looking confused. He's still like kind of wincing in pain every now and again, like when she's talking.
Yeah.
And he very Gandalf-like says, "I don't recognize this place." And yeah, why would he? She, Margot explains that this is the guest wing.
Yep.
Why would he ever come here?
And then she begins to turn away from him and he's just like, "Where are you going?" She, still being super coy, just kind of looks back and says, "To my room."
Yep.
And just leaves him there. And Fade is just left in this center, you know, room because the guest wing is a round room with like individual guest bedrooms kind of, you know, sticking out kind of like hub and spoke style. Right?
Sure, sure.
But our shot of her, you know, walking into the room and then from the doorway, just looking out at Fade and the glow globe. And he's just kind of standing there.
Yeah. And this is where we get the really good shot and the close up of the glow globe. So it's like, it's got like a helmet on almost.
Yep.
It's like, I mean, it's kind of like a spider is just resting on top of the glow globe, with his little legs hanging down. Very utilitarian, mm-hmm. very old looks like, I mean, this seems like an old design. It's not as sleek and futuristic as some of the other ones.
It's definitely more industrial design.
Yeah, maybe that's the better way of describing it.
Yeah, which would make sense because Gedi Prime is a giant factory.
Yeah, exactly. So we shift from here to some interior shots of Margot's room, and she is like undressing in slow mo. She starts to take her hood off, and she's walking over to the bed and.
She's got these super long, like, gloves on that go up past her elbows and everything.
John, I fear this would work on me.
No voice needed.
Nope. So, my last note for this this minute here is, it just said, God, beds in this time period look so uncomfortable. because they're, like, hella platform beds.
Yep.
They're the type of bed that has like the bed, like a foot of bed frame on either side of the mattress.
Yep.
To where you have to like roll over that if you want to get out of bed. Ugh.
Not good if you have to get up in the middle of the night to pee or whatever.
No. It just, and they look so thin. I don't know what memory foam technology has or how that has advanced in the 30,000 years to this point. Hopefully a lot to where you could have just a thin ass mattress, and it still feel really, really good.
Yep.
But yeah, it does not look like a fun bed to me.
I have a few notes from Art and Soul about this sequence as well in mm-hmm. this room, in this scene.
Yeah, go for it.
And I want to get to them for today because tomorrow I feel like we're going to have some more things to talk about. Margot Fenring's guest bedroom was designed specifically so that in the back of the room, there's a giant circle on the wall, right? Mm-hmm. And you have all these thin, you know, thinner, I should say, pieces of siding coming out from the, and kind of like wrapping around the room as a whole. The design inspiration for this room was a spider holding an egg between all of its legs.
Oh, interesting.
And if there's any kind of like symbolism for a Bene Gesserit setting up, you know, like this, you know, seduction of Fade Rotha.
Yep.
It's that. So like
very, very true.
We lean into it with the Harkonnen bug theming, but then also like the Bene Gesserit, like spider, you know, web spinning kind of stuff.
Sure.
It's super cool. I love that kind of shit.
The subtle details.
It makes me so excited to see what they do for Messiah and like what the set, like that'll be one of the things that, you know, on rewatches, like I'm going to be looking so closely at set design and everything there because I know they're just going to fucking kill it. And I think, well, by the time this episode comes out, Messiah would have already started filming.
Nice.
So,
Get on it, Denis. Get on it. Cool. Well, that's I think that's where we should leave it off for this one. A little bit of a shorter one for this week, but yep. We will be back tomorrow to wrap everything up and really just get to see where this seduction ends,
where it leads.
Yeah.
As always, the Dune Minute is online. You can find us at DuneMinute.com on Blue Sky, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow to end this week, and we'll see you then.
All right. See ya.